Good evening and welcome, dear friends. It's wonderful to see all of your faces on the screen this evening. Our Christ candle has been lit, as always, as a symbol of the light that is with us and in us and through all things. So we come together this evening to lay down our lives as we would know them, in one another, in vulnerability, and opening to the new. We know that our shared intention and directed attention matters. It serves. Our work matters for ourselves, one another, and for all humanity. So we place ourselves under the canopy of the work, and under the conscious circle of humanity. And just perhaps we can become food for the archangels. May it be so. So we begin, as usual, by remembering that first, that we're in the fourth week of Easter and wondering what the crucifixion and the resurrected life is telling us about our own lives at this time. Our opening reflection comes from Rodney Collin, with whom we usually close our evenings with his works. He was a British writer. He was born on April 26, 1909, and he died on May 3, 1956. He was just 47 years old. He was a student of P.D. Ouspensky and through him, Mr. Gurdjieff. This reflection comes from his book, The Theory of Conscious Harmony. Now I began to feel that all that is important comes in quietness and waiting, and that activity should only be through the working out, the digesting, and putting forth of what one has learned, so that one may become empty again in order to receive more. Make yourself quiet. Ask your heart, what are you to believe and then to do? And then cling to that and do it with all the force you can muster. And never let the voice of logic and probability prevent you. Again, make yourself quiet. Ask your heart what you are to believe and then to do. Then cling to that and do it with all the force you can muster. And never let the voice of logic and probability prevent you. May it be so for us. A special note this evening, one of the most important practices that we have within the Church of Conscious Harmony and has been for a very long time is that of seva, which means selfless service in and for the community, modeling being while doing. Many of us have committed to seva as part of the oblate rule of life because that is one of the commitments that we have. Today, because of the distributed nature of our community and the times that we've been living in, seva can look entirely different than it used to. So just for a few minutes, I'm very pleased to introduce Jill Frank, who coordinates the works of the seva teams. And Jill has a word for us and an invitation about seva. So Mark, can you find Jill or shall she raise her hand for you? There she is. Good evening, Jill.
Evening. Thank you, Marianne. We are at a wonderful time that we've all been awaiting for a while, where we're starting to return to campus. And so there are some in-person opportunities to bring our SEVA teams that already existed back together. And if you were on a SEVA team, you've probably been contacted by your leader. And for those of you who don't know, the SEVA teams, we have five of them, and the teams come together on Sundays and serve to open up the sanctuary, the classrooms, prepare any hospitality that we're offering, and basically prepare the grounds to greet people when they arrive. And currently, we are in need of some additional SEVA members in person. So if you'd like to join in that way, you're invited to call Lisa at the office, or you can email me, and I'll give my email at the end of this. And then another thing, one of the gifts of COVID is that it expanded our community online, as we're witnessing right now. And we're looking for ways that our online community can join in serving. And there are a few that have become clear to us. I've gotten to know so many of you in the silence at our Centering Prayer Retreats online, and there have been so many of you that have been faithful month after month attending and sitting in the silence online. And we've all been amazed at how the connection has grown and how it feels tangible that we are connecting even in the ethers. So we want to continue these online retreats, and we need technology support staff. It's good to have a co-host. For those of you who have participated, there's always that chance that we can lose connection briefly with our bandwidth going down or something, and it's good to have a co-host on. We also like to support our retreat leaders to allow them to just be a being presence for us and not have to be worrying about screen sharing and calling on people, raising hands and such. So I'm looking for techies or Zoomies or even just willing to learn people who don't have a big fear of technology. Although you'd probably even be a good candidate too. I wasn't too into it myself when this all started and have been stretched into it, and it's not as scary as it seemed. So we have half day, one day, and multi-day retreats, and different levels of engagement with each of those. And training is provided, and there's detailed guidelines and instructions given. So if that may be you, please reach out and let me know. And then Mark Cadell, our media producer, is also interested in some volunteers for little projects. And I don't know the details on all of these. I don't know that he knows exactly what he has in mind, but he's always got ideas and could use anybody with any media experience or interest as well. One of the things he's trying to do is make slideshows of members. So if that's an interest to you, you can let us know. So I'll tell you, there is nothing like serving together in community to really allow you to practice all three lines of the work. You get to work on yourself because you get to see all your programs for happiness and all the eyes that come up that you didn't realize were there. You get to work with others in the work and really rub up against each other. And it helps us see ourselves more clearly. And then we're working for something so much greater. So I invite you to consider this, and there will likely be other opportunities arising. So please reach out if any of this speaks to you, or if you feel like you have any other gifts to share, because we'd love to have you experience the gifts of SEVA. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jill. Thank you. SEVA is a great blessing and a way to meet new people in the community as well. Yes, it's a joy in an informal situation that is a lot different than some of the other opportunities that we have to come together. And it's one of the things that makes this whole community so very special. So now we prepare to even move deeper into that quietness that Rodney Collins spoke of, a place of imminent trust, in receptivity. We prepare to just breathe together, receive influences with back upright and hearts open, mind in directed attention. We breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being. Everything that is hurt, everything that seems dark, harsh, shameful, maimed, ugly, irreparably damaged, unforgiving, and unforgivable, resistant, reluctant. And we hold it and transubstantiate it in our being as whole, as lovely, and radiant, in light. And we do this on behalf of the world, everyone and everything. And we breathe out healing light into our world, this precious and fragile blue marble. We hand over the complexities of our day, the plans for tomorrow, the anxieties and small fears of our hearts. We lay down all that is constructed in external and yield to the divine human life that is above us and in us. And we are unencumbered before one another and God. And in that place of receptivity, we prepare to enter into the prayer of Lectio Divina. Divine seeing and reading, listening. Our passage will be read 3 times with silent pauses in between each. Please come home. Please come home into your own body, your own vessel, your own earth. Please come home into each and every cell and fully into the space that surrounds you. O God, you have probed me, you know me, you know it all. You form my inmost being, you knit me in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am wonderfully made. Please come home. Please come home into your own body, your own vessel, your own earth. Please come home into each and every cell and fully into the space that surrounds you. O God, You have probed me. You know me. You know it all. You form my inmost being. You knit me in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am wonderfully made. Please come home. Please come home into your own body, your own vessel, your own earth. Please come home into each and every cell and fully into the space that surrounds you. Oh God, you have probed me. You know me. You know it all. You form my inmost being. You knit me in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am wonderfully made. And so it is. So we will now stop sharing, and I invite you to just raise your hand and share the gift that you received from this passage or this image, this time of quiet. And in this sharing, we will each receive a gift. Lisa Morgan, please.
This passage is so, so beautiful. I was immediately brought to tears by the first sentence. My body and my being is asking me to come back home and inhabit this. Since October of last year, I have felt outside of myself. Part of that was caring for my mother for 6 months and then allowing myself to be consumed with busyness. And I think part of that is not willing to get into the emotions around my mother's aging. And that I do feel my body and my essence is saying, come home, it's okay and it's safe. Come back into the body, come back into Mother Earth. And that's exactly what I needed to hear tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. I think you speak for many of us. Thank you. Becky, please.
What spoke to me the most was the artwork. When I looked at it, it just immediately took my breath away. I looked at it and what I saw was all the people who have come before me, the conscious circle of humanity, my ancestors, my teachers, upon whom life I stand, and they were calling me to come home. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It's beautiful. Thank you, Becky. Karen Rink, please.
Thank you, Mary Ann. I was just really aware of the feeling that I had inside of me, or the energy that I felt. And I really felt a drawing in of energy into my center. Mm-hmm. And I was just fascinated by, you know, when I hear words of welcome, when I hear words of, you know, come home, how warm and wonderful that is. And, you know, so different from, you know, when, if I'm busy and I'm not paying attention, I don't feel the same way. But when I'm quiet and I'm hearing these lovely words, I'm just, it's just like being in a nice, warm, soothing bath. I can just melt in there. And it's really quite lovely. And I like that awareness of the energy change and shift in energy. It feels so lovely. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you. Kathy, please.
I too am brought to tears by this passage, and it's as a mother. So the last time it was shared, I couldn't even talk, but this time I really feel compelled to share. So brings to mind one of my dear children who is struggling with mental illness, and who I love dearly, as you can imagine. And the faith I have that my child is perfect. As a child of God. So, yeah, that's what I think about when I hear this. And I'm also so aware of how many gifts Jude has, and how I witness these gifts expressed in the world. And I think, wow, maybe these gifts are contingent on the struggles, you know, or related in some way. And I'm constantly in awe of the power of these words to transform my understanding of life. And yeah, that's all I wanted to share.
Thank you. I affirm that with you, Kathy. Thank you. Thank you. Steve, please.
Yeah, I remember when the kids were little. And we used to go down, I used to take the kids down to Six Flags just to give Kathy a break before school started. And we would, when they got to the age where they could stand up next to the "Are you tall enough" sign, to get on the Superman ride. And we got on the Superman ride. And once you were strapped in, you were committed to the ride. And I just thought of that as a metaphor for the hero's journey that Joseph Campbell talks about, that the goal of the trip is to go through many, many different levels and get knocked around and respond to being knocked around and then emerge at the end with your hands raised up high and, you know, open to the mystery of your true self. So that resonates with me, and that's what's been resonating with me for the past few weeks. So thank you.
Amen. Thank you, Steve. Thank you to each of you for your sharings, for all of us, for receiving them, taking them into our being as our own. May they truly feed us all and serve all that which we consider higher and that which we consider lower. Amen. So now again, it is my pleasure to introduce Karen Betts, who will continue to take us on our journey through the Eastertide into the meaning of crucifixion and resurrection in our lives. And we speak of recurrence, our time bodies, and how we go forth. So Karen, welcome.
Thank you so much, Marianne. As she said, this is our review time. We talked a little bit about that last week, and I'm going to help you to remember all that we've covered in these past weeks because it's been a lot. Then we'll take a pause and we'll break out into small groups to have time for sharing and discussion. So I ask that you keep your sharings brief so that everyone in your room can indeed participate. And then about 8:20 or so, we'll close the rooms. We'll come back together and have a few brief comments and the homework for this week before turning it back over to Marianne to close our octave for the night. So before we get off on the review, let's start with last week's homework. So we were talking about recurrence and change, and to read the commentary on page 752, a note on recurrence. And then observe, what are some recurrent themes within your own life? We had some beautiful images, and to ponder on any of them, you know, which one spoke to you? And then to remember that duty is joy, to work with delight. One of the beautiful messages of recurrence is we have eternity. It's okay. We have a long time to get this. So what landed for you? What gift did you find this week? Joe.
Check. Are we sharing now?
We are, sir.
Okay. I wrote something down, so I'm just going to read it. Okay. So in regards to the homework revolving around recurrence, this week, time has repeated itself through the intellectual part of the emotional center. Thoughts and feelings from emotions of being in my grandfather's presence arose continuously. He made me feel uncomfortable. Instead of reacting, the choice to respond was made. While observing these eyes that were inherited by grandpa, the choice to sit and observe them was a delight. By observing and responding, I was able to see the machine in motion. After watching the machine react, the conscious choice to use the time body was made. While in the time body, the idea, if you truly understood, you wouldn't disagree, was in the light. The work idea came with me through the portal into the past. The wheel within the wheels of life came to a halt, the grace of God.
Oh, that's beautiful, Joe. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Rebecca, please.
Hello, Karen.
Hello.
That was beautiful, what Joe just shared. Mm-hmm. For me, this last week, I had an insight that just, well, I would call it an experience of metanoia. It just seems like it is probably a simple thing, but for me, it was huge. And that was simply to look at our experience of life as a circle, or as my work partner put it, which I like even better, a tight spiral, a tight spiral. And it allowed me to have some understanding of what has been talked about at various times in my experience of the work class many times, which is the whole idea of working on ourselves, changing the past and the future as well as the present. I've never been able to really get a hold of that. I've tried to, you know, listen to it and sit with it, and it just has always left me a bit mystified. But when I read both the journey email and also those pages of the commentary where Maurice Nickel actually gives an example, it was like a huge opening for me to that concept, the possibility of that experience. And also it just, you know, when, if I can just find the place in here, which I also loved, was that knowing that we can change the past and the future as well as the present, and the quote unquote extraordinary hope that brings about. It was a big opening for me. So that's it. Thank you.
That's pretty awesome. Thank you.
It was awesome for me.
Bob, please.
Well, I really don't quite know why, but this idea of time body and recurrence really took me by surprise, as has a lot of things in this deep dive into the work. And I've been wondering now that, you know, we're in the process of moving, of selling our house and moving on into a new future that is going to be different from the one that we have now in a physical way. And so I've been going through a lot of my old, you know, photographs and memorabilia and trying to get rid of a lot of it. But at the same time, going back and thinking about, oh, you know, where was I when I bought that book or when I, you know, got that artifact? And I came across some school papers that I'd written when I was in college. And at the top of it, now this was 1965 or 66, I had included a quote from Teilhard de Chardin from the phenomenon of man, now called the human phenomenon. And I realized that this idea and his ideas and this source of wisdom has been resonating within me like a bell all my life. And that I keep coming back to it. And so this idea of recurrence is taking on a rich new meaning, especially as, you know, as I continue to proceed through my seventh or eighth decade here. I'm wondering kind of, okay, where is that headed? And the, and of course I know where it's headed. And that transcendence as well beckons with a new, I don't know, a new reality, a new depth, a new kind of, as Cynthia Bourgeau, liminality and mm-hmm. imaginal quality. So the idea of coming home, as in our first reading tonight, that really hit me, because I thought, well, you know, I moved so often in my life. I counted it up probably 15 times or so. And I know a lot of people have stayed in the same place or in the same city. And I moved all over the place from, you know, different countries and the whole thing. So, and I'm doing it again. And I'm wondering now, okay, what am I really looking for? And that Lectio Divina tonight, you know, kind of put a spotlight on that really home is somehow embodied in the essence of a person, and I guess part of the process is letting go of the, you know, the personality and the case history and the story that you have about all those, you know, artifacts and things that are probably deserving to go to the junk heap rather than into a museum. So it's hard not to kind of ramble on a little bit in the, you know, in this construction of this space that we're in, because it's hard to put a finger on it. It's hard to, you know, grasp it with any kind of solidity, because it is a mystery. And words don't suffice, although Karen and you know, you do a beautiful job of putting the ineffable into words. So that's all. That'll be my quotient for the night. Then, thank you.
Thank you, Bob. What I heard, though, I want to reflect on is a great definition of the fact that work ideas are ferments. We take them in and we struggle and we chew and we carry on and read them 14 different times, and then they land and they bloom and they grow into beautiful things. And I feel like that's exactly what you were showing for us. Thank you, Bob. Jill or Jeff?
Hi, Karen, it's Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
So the homework of time, body, and recurrence, it's really been feeding me very well the last couple of weeks. And I've had a lot of moments of difficulties at work that I've been able to apply these things to that have really, you know, brought me through them. And I feel, you know, I can recognize the beauty of the work and where it takes me from the difficult places that I tend to put myself in. And so what I wanted to speak to was the last line of the poem, "The Duty Was Joy," which in my case is that when I see, or at least the last week or so, that when I see or feel a struggle within, I know that if I do the work, I'll come out on the other side in a good, you know, in a beautiful way. Mm. So when I see something coming up now, I just go, yay. I know it's going to take me somewhere where I really want to go. And it's not easy. It's work. They don't call it the fun. They call it the work. And, but I know where it's going to take me. So, yeah, that kind of has summed up my experience in the last couple of weeks.
Well, thank you. That's Father Thomas's oh goody. That's wonderful. Thank you. Catherine, please.
So I did two pieces of the homework. One was making a list of recurrences, and the other one was making efforts to do that with delight. So I made the list, and I thought there was always that potential to say, you know, those were lots of bad characteristics that need to be fixed. But I did something that Donald has suggested over and over, which was sort of to name that I. Mm-hmm. And so with that, you know, I had a little bit of fun with it. And I had the mother knows best and dog on the bone and the nitpicker, the undecider. So some of those, I still had a not good enough one, which I couldn't come up with a better name for. But what I saw by making the list and doing it with a lightness was that they're like a gift. You know, if I can make a list of something that is a place where I've been identified and it shows up more than once in my life, like many, many, many times, then, you know, I can look at it showing up another time as this is a gift for me to make another work opportunity. So my daughter is having a vow renewal ceremony this week, and Mother Knows Best had many opportunities. And I found myself with one where she had a seating chart and I reviewed it and she asked me to, I gave it back to her. She made a few changes, gave it back to me, mostly the way she wanted it in the first place. And I actually let it go. I mean, I really wanted so badly to go back and make it the way I had given her that she didn't accept all my edits. And I just went, you know, mother doesn't always know best. And so I gave her what she was asking for. And that was kind of a breakthrough for this one and a little bit of a lighter place to do work. So thank you.
That was a great gift you gave both of you. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Kelly, please.
Oh, let's see. Am I there?
You are.
So in June, I started coming to the journey groups or the school and reading the commentaries. And over that time, I found I was starting to believe in eternal recurrence of this life. And first there was a freak out of, oh no, I'm going to have to live this life again. And my group helped me with that. But in thinking back, a lot of memories have come to the fore that I didn't understand before I knew there was something odd. So I want to tell one quick story. My small group already heard this, but I went to India and I was 19 or 20 and staying on the coast of India, went into town for lunch and met a couple who had come from the Seychelles, and they were out of money, and we took them back with us to where we were staying. And he had the Tales of Beelzebub in his backpack, and I was able to read those over the next month. And I just don't know what that means. How could that happen? Anyway, you don't have to answer that. But the one thing I noticed was that certain times that I thought were to do with recurrence I remember being present in like a decision-making, maybe even multiple centers effort, whereas guidance is more like I wake up knowing something or I hear a phrase. This was a choice. Ooh, gave me chills. That's all.
Oh, having choices is such a gift. And we learned that in the work, because when we're mechanical, we have no choice. We are on our train track and running steam full ahead. So yay for you, Kelly. And thank you for joining us and sticking it out. It's a great journey to be on. We have a few more minutes. Who else would like to share? Going once. Kathy.
I'll just share briefly. I had another image that came to mind, that was like a spiral with a growing pattern, like a nautilus shell. So the recurrences, sorry about my phone, the recurrences kind of space out as we develop. So maybe the recurrences are a little more frequent in our youth and become, there's a little more space as we mature. But I don't know. I'm wondering about that.
I wonder. Yeah, thank you. Pam, please.
I have an eye that is recurring, that is one of them is that it keeps reaching for the raise hand button and then pulling its hand back into its lap, reaching out and pulling it back. But the recurrence that I saw is around helping. It's a recurrent theme for me in my life that I think that I can help. And my husband had a project that he invited me to quote, help him with this last weekend. And it was an opportunity to we've done many projects together, and helper eyes have always been present. And it has led to a depletion of my energy and not a very good experience together. So I here it came again, another opportunity. But I've been working with the gathering exercises, the welcoming prayer, breath, things that bring me to center. And so this time, and it was a beautiful day that Saturday last weekend. So I'm outside, if you can picture it, and the birds are tweeting and the sun is shining and it's a lovely day. And we have the project that's going to happen. And as I stood there, I thought of two or three things that would be helpful to do. And instead of reaching out and doing that, I stayed in a gathered place and watch the energy of the eye when it would rise up to have this good idea. Oh, I could sweep this thing while he's figuring out what it is I can do. And that'll be helpful, surely, you know, or do this whatever thing. but the energy of it, I could begin to feel as it went out from my center to get identified with the eye. And that became pretty intriguing to me at the moment and trippy. And then I would just watch it, and then it would come, here comes my, something calls me back to myself. And all of a sudden I'm sitting and it's a beautiful day and the birds are tweeping and the breeze is blowing. And then all of a sudden there's a voice that says, come over here and hold the level for me. And so that's what he wanted me to do. So I got up and I went over and I held the level. I didn't say anything about anything. And pretty soon it said, thank you. And I went back and I sat at the table and it started all over again. And I went for 8 hours doing that and doing the project. And at the end of it, we had not argued one time. I had energy to go in and, you know, do a load of clothes and start dinner and feel pretty darn good about sitting around and watching the movie that night. You know, I had all this energy and it was just, it was a miracle. It was a miracle, you know.
It is a—
so I don't know. I love that idea. Again, I had heard that from somebody else, that tightly coiled spring unwinding, the nautilus shell and the less frequent occurrences. I think there's something to that. And I wonder if I'll be given this opportunity again soon. It's like Jeff was saying, I can't wait. You know, let's have that one again so I can see what happens this time. So with delight and with joy, I work.
Thank you, Pam. Your work is wonderful. Bonnie, please.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm talking about reoccurrence.
Mm-hmm.
And an eye that I have had over the years. It's being afraid of what I can do, not what I can't. Mm-hmm. With the idea that I've been put in a variety of situations that put me to the test. And then it takes me to, I need to go one step further. And I'm a little, something in me says that I can do it. But there's something else that says I can't. And it keeps coming back and keeps coming back. And most recently, this last week or last couple of weeks, I've had a new job that I've been called upon to organize some events and put myself out there and reached and connected and did some conversations that were kind of difficult. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to challenge, to accept the challenge, to just get in there. And with God's help, I can do this. But I observed myself saying, I can't do this. And then I just said, who says you can't? Mm-hmm. With God's help, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And the event did come out as planned. So in a little bit better. And I felt good about it when I actually had confidence in what was inside me to help me, mm-hmm, to actually do that. So it has been over and over again in my life, and I'm observing that in me, and I'm stopping that cold. And I want that. I want myself to reach out and do what I can. And a lot of it has to do with helping people in the service industry. And that's not always easy, but I'm giving it a good try. So that's my reoccurrence.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Bonnie. Thank you so much. Well, that was all very rich. And thank you all for sharing. So what I'm going to do now is a quick review of everything we've done over these last few weeks. So I'm going to ask you to lean in. It's going to be quick. I know I talk fast and I apologize. I'll work on my cadence except for tonight. Tonight, I'm going to continue to talk fast so we get through it all, because I want you to have as much time as possible for your sharing. So let me get back to the slides and get my computer to play with us. There we go. So we began this exploration looking at our machinery and what was it in us that limits our view of reality. So we can all be categorized as a man number one, number two, or number three in our mechanicalness. But we're striving to be man number four. We wish to be balanced. We wish to use all of our centers rightly. But in order to do that, we have to see our story, because our story holds us back into our mechanicalness. We've created pictures of ourselves in our imagination. Excuse me, sorry. And we've built them very carefully with our vanity over our life, and we defend them to the death with our pride. And this is often a good way to find your point in the work, but it's pretty difficult because we have buffers, and buffers act as veils over our eyes. We do wish to see clearly, but our body has been programmed since our childhood. All of our past experiences are registered in our body mind. We have those well-worn ruts of our neuropathways, the habits of thinking and feeling, and we don't even question them. We do wish to think in a new way and free ourselves from our mechanical behavior, but it is difficult. Our associations, I love the definition of our associations, are eyes holding hands. Feels a little like the game of Red Rover. We all hold hands and don't let the kid through. It's the way our eyes behave too. But we do wish to be free of that associative thinking. And so we begin to observe our emotions and we anchor them in this body. There's so many functions in our body that we're unaware of that happen anyway, our circulation, our digestion, and we only become aware of them when they malfunction. But the body is what can give us clarity. It is a receiver and a transformer of energies. We learned that what fires together wires together, and where our attention goes, our neurons flow. I'm gonna read that backwards. So that means we can develop new neuropathways. And when we do that, we begin the path into incarnation. And we do with self-emptying, and the welcoming prayer is a powerful tool for that. Because within us, there is a center of gravity where every outer experience has an inner experience of tranquility, of gratitude. We were given this yoga practice to help us be grounded in gratitude, because that helps us to create a new body. And that new body's built from effort, the effort we make in making conscious choices. Because then we can become that person of no preference. What a gift. And that's where we know that our physical humanity is not separate from our indestructible spiritual essence. And that indestructible spiritual essence is alive and well in our time bodies. When we're in a more centered state, we can begin to explore those time bodies, past, present, and future. Our time body is a conscious connection and gives us a functional relationship to time. And this is a big idea. We got 2 weeks to struggle with it with Peter. And like Jeff had said, you know, it's a ferment, let it grow. During Holy Week, Peter reminded us that we were given the commandment, as I have loved you, so you should love one another, from John 13:34. But how do we choose love? Well, one way is to recognize that everything happens for you. That's a very new way of thinking. And we were given Byron Katie's practice of self-inquiry to help deepen that practice. And when we have that new way of thinking, we can relieve the suffering of our common father. And we begin then to heal the body of Christ. And we are each a very precious and unique cell. So with that perspective, we choose to become a conscious servant. We engage intentionally our work, and intentionality is the key. By self-observation, non-identification, self-remembering, we change ourselves. And as we've learned, we change each other in the world. So as we participate in reciprocal maintenance, we are nourished and we nourish others. Like Marianne said, we become food for the archangels. The recurrence can bring useless mechanical suffering. We wish not to slip back under the spell of Nepenthe. We want to be conscious. So to change our past, we work now. To change our future, we work now. And all of this is to give us freedom, and freedom from time's debtor's prison. Again, because what we do and think now affects everyone and the world. So that was the quick review. So we're going to break into rooms of small groups. Please, in your group, share and feed each other with these newfound keys of freedom and these wonderful work ideas. And then at 8:20, we'll close the rooms and we'll come back. Mark, take it away.
It looks like it's just me and you left now.
Okay. Well, I was in a room and then I told them I was going to back out because I already been talking. So it looks like it went very smoothly, sir. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I read the instructions, but I'm a doubter until I see it happen.
Well, I'm one of the techie fraidy cats. It's like, I know enough to be dangerous. And when Michael says it's easy, it's like, you know, you're sweet pumpkin, but I don't believe a word you say.
It really is, actually, but I don't know. I'm a non-Apple person for the specific reason that Apple never lets you do things to the level of detail that I want. I want it to be just so, and they want you to do it their way, you know. So most people are fine with that. Some people, like myself, are not.
Well, I am very grateful for everything that you are doing to help this become a very successful evening thus far.
I was telling Jill that at least at this point, having done it a few times, my work is more in when I'm not hosting, to not obsess about how things are being done. It's actually not.
Go ahead.
It's pretty mechanical for me, actually. Jeannie, you're not in the room. Hi, Jeannie. How did I put her in a room?
Well, that one I'm going to leave with you, sir. She could go to room 14. That was the room I was in.
I was locking up, and it bounced me off, so I had to leave. It forced me out.
All right, we'll see if Mark can't get you back.
Yeah, it's not, you know, when I first did it, I had an unassigned person, and I was able to put them in a room, but she's not showing up as unassigned.
Oh.
So I don't know how to put her in a room.
Yeah. Oh, because she was assigned. Do you remember the room number you were in?
I got bounced off before you got into the groups.
Ah, okay. Mark will try his best, or we will make this a room and let you share. Okay, I'm showing one. Nope, not anymore. I'm not doing anything, Mark, I promise.
No, somebody just came on and I was able, they popped up as unassigned and I was able to assign them, but Jeannie is just she's an outlier. I just can't figure out why.
You're just free floating out here, girl.
Just not showing up in my list at all.
Okay. Well, Jeannie, what landed for you in all of this wonderful exploration?
Oh, I found her. She's showing up in the room she was supposed to be in. So let me put you back in that.
Okay, Jeannie. See you later.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Your showing is not, well, I'm just going to put you in another room. Your showing is not joined, but instead of trying to figure that out, I'll put you in another room.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I think. We'll see. There she goes.
Look at you. All right. You taking notes on all of this? Because we're all going to need to know this.
I never take notes on anything. You know, I used to take meticulous notes. And at some point, I noticed that once I was done taking notes, I never looked at them again. So when I realized that, I just stopped taking notes.
I just find when I write it down, it helps me to remember it. I may not go back to the notes like you, but you know, if I just blunder my way through things, I'm like, how did I do that?
Well, I have a syndrome that is common among people with good memories, is that we spend our formative years not needing to because our memories are really good. And then when the memories start to fade, there's no habits to work with. So that's what I have to learn, a habit of writing stuff down now. Not easy because my memory is still good-ish. So
my memory is pretty good. My word search gets very frustrating because I can tell you the word I'm trying to find. I can tell you the letter it starts with, how you use it. Now I can't come up with a damn word. And that's been something that's developed over the last couple of years. I kind of find that one frustrating, but
my mom had that, so I'm hoping that I don't run into that, but I probably will.
It's not debilitating, but it's frustrating. And I can certainly substitute another word for it, but I was looking for that one that began with a C and you know, all of that.
I've always been a control freak, and I still kind of am. And when I was doing a lot of reading on issues with the elderly and so forth, and past life regression and all that stuff, it came up that, yeah, people, you know, if you don't learn it on your own, then God will force you by doing things like taking your memory away and taking your words away and stuff like that to force you to deal with not being in control. So I got that to look forward to.
Well, aging will teach you a number of things. Yes. You know, the first pair of glasses was bifocals. Thank you.
No, my mom, she died recently, and she, at the end of the last few years, she was going on and on about, I can't believe I can't do this anymore. She was in her early 80s. Like, Mom, have you never, like, observed aging before?
The problem is I still think I can. You know, I think I'm like, I can do that. I'm fine. And like my body goes, you idiot. No, you can't. I'm like, oh, okay.
Or, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't look in the mirror any more than I have to. And when I do, it's like, oh shit, that's not the picture I had in my head about myself.
I look in the mirror once in a while and go, who is that old woman?
I know.
When did I get a wrinkly neck and all this stuff and the gray hair? Ugh. Yeah.
You know, lines in your face, in my observation, are a function of, you know, what you do with your face repetitively. So I bet someone schooled in it could look at, you know, an older person and tell their personality right away.
Well, indeed, because all of your facial muscles are connected to your skin. You have a few, of course, connected to your jaw to chew and things like that, but all of your facial expression muscles are connected to your skin. So that's why people have eyes that smile and big smile lines here and the frown lines there.
Frown line,
yeah. I call them squint lines. They're squint.
One of the interesting things that Zoom has done for me is that I often look at myself in the picture and the expression on my face doesn't reflect what I'm feeling. Like I'll look stern, but inside I'm fine, you know? So I find myself sometimes trying to change my face to match the way I feel inside.
You know, that's a good point, because I remember that as a homework assignment many, many, many years ago about look at your facial feature, you know, look at the faces you make. And I have no idea what I do unless it's a big one. I mean, if it's a big smile or whatever, sure, I'm aware of doing that. But I'm just sitting and talking. No, I don't know. And you're right. Zoom is, you know, giving me, whether I wanted it or not, you know, quite a mirror. Although I find with the bifocal thing, I, you know, if I really want to see me, I got to do this.
Well, I thought I knew what expression I had, but it wasn't, what I was seeing didn't match what I thought I knew.
Anyway, I think that's probably true for most of us. Mm-hmm. I remember one day going past the sound booth and Jeff Frank was in the booth. And what a nice man, what a sweetheart, what a good guy. And his face was thunder. And I laughed and he said, what's so funny? I said, your resting bitch face is horrible. You're just the nicest guy and that's terrible.
I relate to that. Yeah.
So I have a feeling we all have significant resting bitch faces, whether we want them or not.
So we got to do 8:20 is when you want to close it up?
Yeah. Yeah. I figured.
Okay. At 8:15, I'll send out a 5-minute warning.
Oh, excellent. See, that's why you have people with that are into details doing these things.
I'm definitely into the details.
Oh, I used to tell my crew at work that I am such not a detail person, which is why I need to surround myself with detail people.
Now, a team needs a balance of that.
Oh, absolutely. I can do the A to Z and I don't really care how we get there, but I know there are a whole lot of steps. So I need people who are good at lining out those steps, making it all work.
When I was married, which was before CCH, my ex was an executive at, you know, in technology and unbelievable abstract thinker and just amazing in many ways, but she couldn't figure out how to program the VCRs the way I had it set up, you know, with my, you know, super flexible, but not particularly simple. And it was funny, but it's just that. I mean, she could do things that I couldn't dream of doing and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was used to think of myself really as probably a good boss because I really didn't care how you did it as long as it got done. But when I worked with people who wanted that kind of guidance, you know, the two of us got so frustrated because like, yeah, you know how to do it, just do it. No, tell me what to do. I'm like, no, just do it. All right.
The other main competitor to Zoom, which is more for companies than for people or churches or whatever, is the one that my company makes. So
what's it called?
WebEx.
Okay, I've heard, but not ever used. Yeah.
So we're always like, basically, they use us as guinea pigs for new releases. So we always have something that's like 6 months ahead of what the rest of the world has, but it's so much more complicated than Zoom, but it's a lot more flexible and actually secure. I mean, they have to use our stuff for, you know, board meetings, which could be, you know, someone got into that.
Wouldn't that be a mess?
Yeah. Oh. So that's the main differentiator. But although we've actually more recently put in some functions to make it look more Zoom-like, because as more and more people use it, they don't, you know, when they look at it, they're like, ah.
Right, they don't want to go back and forth. Like,
make it a little more user-friendly.
Well, we used, I don't recall what it was called. Was it Vimeo?
Vimeo is what the church uses for Sunday and Wednesday.
Okay, and that's what the hospital used. Okay. For these kinds of things. But somebody behind the scenes like yourself that knew what to do, all I had to do was log in and, you know, participate. But, you know, and I've used Skype and FaceTime, and that's about it. So Zoom seems pretty high tech to me.
Well, and the church people generally have better etiquette. Like, part of the reason that I struggle not to obsess with it is I've spent, you know, 10 years on it at work with crying babies in the background and so forth. And it's like, mute. I just wanted the host control so I could mute them.
You know? Yeah, please. Can I just turn you off? Yeah. No, and I like the function that I can choose the Zoom audio control. So, because my dog will escape my husband and come to the door because she's, you know, supposed to be in here with me. So as long as y'all aren't hearing whining and scratching while she's whining and scratching at the door, you know, it's like, hey, good, thank you. And I assume not, because no one has said anything.
Well, Zoom, I've noticed that Zoom has a thing that is both bad and good, where they try to, through processing, try to figure out what the main, the main voice is, and get rid of all the background stuff. Which is good for what you just described, but like when you hear someone ring a bell and like you hear the first bit of it and then it just dies.
Yes.
You've heard that before, right? That's that algorithm.
Oh, okay. Hi, well, Marina.
People are just bailing. It's too early.
Oh, you guys.
All right.
Okay.
I'll send out the close down since everybody's rejoining.
We'll behave ourselves. Hi.
Well, it's fine. It's fine. You're just.
It's okay. No, I can't hear you. I think you're still muted. Yeah, you're still muted.
Do you want to talk to us?
Do you want to talk? There we go.
The button at the bottom that says leave room. That's why, and we saw your little sign that said 5 more minutes, and it was more than 5 minutes. So
was it written? No, it's been
no,
3 minutes.
No, you still have, you, it was only
I'm
3.
I'm timing it. All right, it's fine. We're just BSing here. I'm going to go ahead and send out the close room signal.
Might as well. Absolutely.
Sorry.
That's fine.
Not a problem. Just
no problem.
Being silly.
So, Mark, let me know when you think everybody's back in. Thank you.
Just ended, so everybody, well, they're still coming back, but it's officially ended.
Okay, I'll give a
5 or 10 seconds.
All right. Well, I think the most of us are back in. So thank you very much. I hope this was a great experience and you were fed thoroughly at the banquet. So throughout this 11 weeks, we've honestly been asking God to create in us a clean heart and to renew a right spirit within us. And we can rest assured that we are upheld by God's grace and generous spirit, as we're told in Psalm 51. So let me take us to our homework for this next week. And then I think we'll have a little bit of time to for any additional comments or questions. So this week, reflect and listen for any idea that comes to meet you. And we've engaged a lot tonight. Maybe get back into the archives and read the original email. Study the diagrams. Gaze on those images. Take in their impressions. Allow them to enliven your emotional center. And rest. Give gratitude for this precious life in all of its wondrous, evolving, infinitely great, and infinitely small expressions. Revisit the subtle yoga practice, grounding and gratitude. That's from the talk that was on March 4th to the 11th. And participate in this Easter octave. Go through your small daily crucifixions to your resurrection and ascension. Can state the feelings and the sensations and know that this state is yours always. So we have a couple more minutes if anyone would like to make a brief comment or has a question, please raise your hand. Jeannie, please.
I found this poem by Teilhard de Chardin, and the first phrase is, above all, trust in the slow work of God. Mm-hmm. And that's quite reassuring.
Thank you. About two more minutes, if anyone else has something they'd like to say. Marcia, please. Or not. Jim, please.
Yeah, I wanted to say something because I was, I don't want to say I was harassed in my little breakout group, but I was confronted by the fact that I have not been speaking on Thursday nights. And so I wanted to break that criticism by just saying something. But what I wanted to say was, I thought that the technical work that Mark Russell has been doing and particularly did tonight, I was overwhelmed with appreciation for how that all worked. Since we can't be in small groups together, this was a pretty darn good approximation. And I just thought he handled it admirably. And even his little message was just like Mark speaking to me. So thank you, Mark.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mark. And thank you, Jim, for bringing that up. Lauren.
I would like to thank you, Karen.
Thanks, sir.
For letting all this flow through you and in such a gracious way. And it's warmed me in so many different ways. And I just wanted to thank you. I'm sure I speak for a lot of people.
It's my pleasure, sir. Thank you. And thank you all for your engagement tonight and for doing the small breakout rooms and leaning into the review. We've covered a lot. And so now it's time for Marianne to bring us back in prayer and close our octave tonight. So, Marianne.
Thank you so much, Karen. Yes, we have these past 11 weeks covered a lot of ground. So from Rodney Collin again, we honor his life and we listen to his wisdom. We are all mirrors for each other. We see others in reverse to the way we see ourselves. That is why we cannot judge. We can always measure, never judge. What is the difference? To measure is to observe. To judge is to say why things are and how they ought to be. For example, if I see a fat man and say he looks as though he weighs 200 pounds, I am attempting to measure. If I say that man ought not to be so fat, evidently he eats too much because he is greedy, I am trying to judge. Why do I know why he is fat? He may be suffering from a glandular disturbance. We are to measure by our highest standards, not judge, ever. In order to judge, we would have to know everything about a person, his complete heredity and all his environment, the influences that have affected him since conception. We would have to have all this knowledge present in our mind simultaneously in order to be able to compare his action with his possibilities. Even God does not judge people while they are still in this world. Let us join together in prayer, praying aloud wherever we are, the prayer of God's love. God's love is always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully, and how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and to sleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen.